Accession number 30395, Mr. Barry Summerfield, Real 7. Now, what happened when you, what was the situation when you got to Pyongyang? I'm not sure.
Well, it seemed that nobody knew what was going on. That was the thing. The lack of information was absolutely astounding. Our officers couldn't find out anything. And the thing is that the amusing thing was we were on this train, and instead of having a ramp to get off like we'd got on down in Pusan, there was no ramp in Pyongyang to get us off. So we're on the train, and they're trying to think of this sort of, well, how the hell are we going to get the tanks off? And in the end, they did the only thing that they could do. They carefully turned each tank sideways by locking one track and going on the other, so that the tank, in actual fact, was then sideways on, so that the front was over the front and the back was over the other side. So instead of being long ways on the flat car, we were now sideways on, and just drove off very, very slowly and very carefully, hoping that the weight of all the other tanks would stop the whole lot from tippling over, which in actual fact it did. And that's how we got off. That is actually how we got off the train.
And it worked.
And it worked.
Even the later ones.
We got off. What happened after us, we don't know, because we weren't, because what they did then is they put us straight on the road and we started heading north. I mean, we had no idea, A, where we were, B, where we were going, or what the hell we were doing. We had absolutely no idea. So,
and were you travelling in any particular format or just...
Yeah, no, we were travelling as a troop of four tanks, right? What, where the rest were, I had no idea. But our troop was by itself and was just heading north. we stopped about three or four times in various American camps on the way. They're all tents, all tented encampments. They had masses of supplies up there, which were obviously coming up by road and rail, you know, dumps. And
what were these depots like? Or camp? Were they depots or camps?
They were depots, really depots, but under campus. They were vast. And then,
and would you, could you get fuel?
Could get everything we wanted. Anything we wanted, we could get. There was no shortage of anything. And then, about after 2 days, we're still heading north. We suddenly became aware of the fact that everybody, there were literally at first one or two, and then it got to a couple of dozen, and then it got to hundreds of lorries all coming towards us, all absolutely full of American soldiers, and they were all heading south. So I did make a humorous remark then. I thought, well, somebody is going in the wrong direction. I had a feeling it might be us. But we kept going because that was the instructions we had. And about the third day, it became apparent that what we, which became a national saying afterwards, but I don't know how the saying started, but it became the Americans were bugging out. This is the saying. And we just thought, you know, like that, we realised that something obviously serious was going on, because you can't have that many frontline troops going back and nobody going forward. So it obviously had to be a retreat. We'd figured that out by that time. About the end of the third day...
Did you know it was because the Chinese had
come? No, at that point we didn't. About the end of the third day, towards the evening, we were thinking about, you know, Lee went up for the night, when we got to this bridge. Now, there was an American combat team on the bridge and an American engineer team. I remember that the officer in charge, the American officer in charge, was a major. And our lieutenant said, right, we've got to cross the river. So the major said, you can cross the river, but you've got to be back over at a certain time tomorrow, because we're going to blow the bridge. He said, because as far as we're concerned, this is the first time we heard about the Chinese. He said, as far as we're concerned, between us and the Chinese, there isn't anybody. No, he said, there's nobody coming back through here now. So we went up to the top of the hill.
Now, which river is this?
No, it wasn't. It was just a river. It wasn't any particular river. It was just a river.
And so you went across it, did you?
Oh, we crossed it. It was a Bailey Bridge. Well, an American Bailey Bridge. So it would take the tanks, and we crossed over. And at the top of this big hill was a schoolhouse. Remember it quite clearly. And from there, the view was quite astounding because there was nothing in front of us at all. Remember, by this time, it was now winter. We're coming up towards Christmas, right? And there was nothing in front of us except this plane. Now, we didn't know. It wasn't until years later I looked at maps and I realised where we were. There was this plane which went for miles and miles and miles, covered in snow, and in the distance, something like about 20, maybe even 30 miles away, was this range of mountains. And that was Manchuria. And we never knew that. And between us and there, somewhere, was the Yalu River.
Yalu,
yeah, that was the river that apparently is borders between North Korea and China, or Manchuria, as it is. Well, we made ourselves comfortable there overnight. And up to that point, we hadn't even fired the guns, except to, you know, warm them up. We'd never fired the guns at all. We had no reason. We didn't draw anybody.
Had you dug in on the hill? I mean, had you got yourself hauled down and the rest of it?
Oh, we were more or less like that. We had one tank on guard.
Now, tell me how you took a position and how do you take a position on a hill?
Well, on this particular hill, as such, we stayed hull down on this side of the hill.
Now, can you explain to them what a hull down position is? Because we know, okay, but they may might not.
Right. You take the tank up as far as you can up the hill. You're the commander until you can see over the top of the hill. And then you go up just a little bit more so that the gun is over the top of the hill. So that the hull is below the hill, but the gun and the turret are above. And that's our hold down position. And that's the position we all took. Some of the lads, what they did then is they actually unlumbered for the night, took their blankets and their bedding and all that, and went in the schoolhouse and kept down there because it was warmer.
Now, what about the role of the guard tank?
Well, the guard tank was just on duty all night long. He kept radio watch as well. So he had his radio on, so he had to use his generator. Fortunately, that was something that the Centurion had, was a generator, an auxiliary generator, so that we could get power at any time. So that we didn't have to run the main engine to use the radio. So during
the guard tank ran the wireless watch.
Yeah,
anything else?
No, just kept watch and ran the wireless watch. That was all. So there was a wireless operator on duty, a wireless operator on duty all the time.
So was there anybody actually watching, or was there an infantry unit watching?
No, we didn't have any infantry with us. We were by ourselves.
So who was watching for any?
Well, the tank commander that was on duty then.
He was
there. And then during the course of the night, he would have sent one of his crew over to the house to call up the next crew to come out and relieve him. I think it was two on, four off.
And would you use your own tank, or would they use this?
No, we all just use that one tank.
That one tank.
Yeah.
Now, what about food? What food?
No, we had rations on board, so we were never ever short of food.
Now, what food rations did you carry?
We carried emergency rations.
Or what were they?
Corned beef, biscuits. They had butter. You had toilet paper. The Americans weren't as good as theirs. I didn't think the American rations were as good as theirs because they had richer food. And remember that we were still rationed. We didn't have that sort of rich food. I was quite happy with the corned beef, really. The corned beef and old-fashioned biscuits. We had jam. We had butter. We also, of course, when we were in Busan, had managed, I can't remember how we got this, but we got it. We got a sack of tea, not a pack of tea, a whole sack of tea, a case of condensed milk, a whole case of condensed milk, 24 tins, and a sack of sugar. And that was their brew-up rations, and every tank had that.
And how would you, What was the method of quick? I mean, they used to say in the desert they could make tea in no
time. We did the same thing.
So how did you make it? I mean, what?
Yeah, what you did is you got an old billy can, not a billy can, but an old tin. Put a wire over it so that you could dangle it from the back of the tank. Filled it with sand, right? And that was it. Then poured petrol over the top of it and lit it. You had a little thing where you had your billy can on the top, and that's how you boiled your water. Exactly the same. The system never changed. It was the same as the First World War as well.
And what was the tea like you'd make?
Bloody good. I mean, because the army definitely did march on his cup of tea, and we did. There was no question about that.
So what about latrines on your hill position?
You dug it. What you did, it was a bit primitive. When you were on the move, you would stop. You'd go into the nearest field, dig a hole, squat down and go to the toilet. As simple as that. Very primitive.
And just cover it up afterwards?
Yeah, because there were no toilets. I mean, you couldn't carry a toilet on a tank. I mean, obviously, when you went into a camp, it was different. They all had latrines.
Now, what are you doing up on? Where would you sleep in your tank? You know, if you're not on guard tank.
You sleep in the tank, in that case. Unless a couple of times when we were coming back were going up, you had two tarpaulins on the tank, big tarpaulins, which were tank covers, right? So you would fold those in such a way on the back of the tank, put all your blankets inside, on all four, if you're fully dressed in every respect, just crawl in, pull it all over your head. Because in the morning, you knew when you woke up, you'd be covered in snow anyway. The heat from the tank was being kept in a little bit by all the tarpaulins and everything, so you were quite warm and cosy. And remember, you were fully dressed.
Now, it's still October.
Mm. Now, no. By this time, we're coming towards November now.
Going into November, right?
Yeah, November and December.
Now, how cold is it getting? I believe it's coldest in January, but I mean, I think you start noticing.
No. By December, it was cold.
How cold was it? I mean, for someone who's never, I mean, an English winter's nothing. Tell me what.
Okay, we're going over ordinary ground. Forget roads, because there weren't any roads where we were. There were tracks, but there were no roads. There was only one road went through Korea, that went from north to south, and that was the A1, and that was the only macadamized road in Korea. There were obviously a few in the capital, but basically the main arterial road which went from north to south was the only road. We didn't use that very much anyway. To give you an idea of how cold it was, everywhere was covered in snow, deep snow.
How deep?
Well, could vary up to 3 or 4 foot.
Drifting up to 3 or 4?
Yeah, up to 3 or 4 foot. Now, assuming, like, for example, on that hill where we were there, we drove up and we stopped. Now, the minute we stopped, remember we'd been driving for many hours, so the tracks were warm, because they do get warm, very warm, the tracks. They immediately settled into the ice and the snow that was on the ground, because they melted it, obviously. But within an hour, that would have been solid ice again. And the minute it was solid ice, you were stuck to the ground. So we learnt the first night the trick to do. Find whatever bushes you could, cut them down, and run the tank tracks onto the bushes. That way they wouldn't freeze to the ground. That was the only way you could do it. Some of the lads tried using one of the tarpaulins and running the tank onto the tarpaulins. But they found that if it snowed during the night again, then you were up a creek because snow had landed on the tarpaulin and frozen again. So it was serious. The weather was a serious, serious problem. We were fortunate, unlike the infantry, because of the way that we were and because we had the tank and one thing and another. I don't remember any cases of frostbite in the tank crews. But you couldn't touch any metal or anything like that without gloves.
I was going to say, it's a bit difficult in a tank, isn't it?
Oh, yes. Yeah, you couldn't touch any metal without gloves on.
Why not?
Because your fingers would freeze to it. As simple as that. Oh, no, I mean, serious freeze. Oh, yeah, it was really cold.
And did you have any special uniform, either early on or...
No, early on we had nothing. We had all we were given in the UK, which was the string vest and the woolly long johns. the anorak, as it were. No, it wasn't anorak. It was like a smock. It wasn't very thick, but it was windproof, and it had a hood. But the heavy coat that we got, that was advantageous. But the only thing about the heavy coat, it was good because it was like a fur coat in a way, but it was bulky, and it wasn't very good for a tank man to have a bulky thing on. You know, you really needed something that was really warm but lightweight, which I believe they got later on. I don't know.
Now, so what happens next? And you're on this hill. You're on the, you know, what happens?
And then that's when this major said that you've got to be moving. But one thing, at this point, we'd lost complete contact with the regiment.
Your troop.
Had lost complete
contact.
Now,
why is that?
Because we didn't realise there were so many mountains in Korea that radio contact was extremely difficult. Extremely. Most places had then resorted back to Morse code. We were that serious. We could get through on Morse code. We didn't. I could never manage to get through. But I understand that some of the units did get through on Morse code, but we had no contact with the regiment at all.
Now, so you're on this hill. There's four tanks.
And then the following morning, we stood two. As
now,
normal.
What does that mean?
Well, it means everybody gets out, gets into the tanks, warms the tanks up, and waits for dawn to break to make sure if the enemy are coming or not. Nothing happened, so the officer went down to see the major down on the bridge, and we brewed up and had breakfast.
Now, you knew he was going to blow it up.
Oh, we knew it was going to be blown up that day. He told us. He said, when the last units are over, and during the night, incidentally, a couple of units came through, but they were the very final, you know, the tail end.
Were you covering the last units? Is that what you
were doing? Oh, yeah, we obviously were, but we didn't know it. I mean, we had no idea what we were doing. We were still completely in the dark. And I mean, the business
but
about
that is
being
what
told,
you were doing.
Business, well, yeah. It was what we were doing.
Because it sounds like you're on a hill just yeah. past the bridge and you're the last unit back.
Oh, yeah, we were. Yeah. When we came over that bridge and they blew it, there was nobody, as far as we know, the other side. We never heard of anybody ahead of us.
Now, what happened? So that morning, could you see any
no.
signs of the Chinese coming?
No, this is the thing. We didn't know. We didn't know anything at all. All we were told is that the Chinese had entered the war. And then sometime during the morning, the Americans on the bridge had got the information that the Chinese, in actual fact, were already behind us. Somehow or the other, they'd come down the middle, down the central part of Korea, never been detected, and in actual fact were behind us, and we didn't know this.
Now, was that true, or was that a rumor?
Well, apparently, no. It turned out to be true in the end. It did turn out to be true.
Now, so what happens? You can't see anything in front of you.
No, nothing at all.
So
in front
just a big valley, the Yalu River.
And that's it.
But you can't see fighting or troops
no,
or nothing.
Nothing.
So what happens?
So then we came back over the bridge.
Anything happened with that?
Yeah, then they blew it. It was quite a spectacular bang. But it certainly wouldn't have stopped the enemy infantry from coming over, because they fought it anyway. But it would stop tanks. They couldn't have used any tanks. And then we started coming back south. As simple as that.
Now, so you're on a retreat now, though?
Yeah, we're on a retreat.
Now, are you on the road? You're not on the road.
No, but this time we got back onto the road. And we were heading back the way we'd come.
Now, what is the situation like on the road, you know, in this retreat? Are you passing other units or what's
well,
happening?
Well, no. What we were doing, as we were approaching these places where we the supply depots and that, most of them at that point had been blown up anyway. There was nothing left. They just scorched earth, gone, everything.
So all those big depots?
Oh, they're all blown up. They couldn't take them. They couldn't move it. They're just blowing them all up. Everything. There were lots and lots of lorries broken down on the road. And we were passing lots of troops that were walking, marching. Not marching, but all Americans, obviously. The only time we saw British troops at all where we bumped into some units in Pyongyang of the Middlesex, but they were only just small infantry units, that's all. We're not even sure what they were doing there.
So what happens next then?
So then we got back to, eventually, we got back to Pyongyang.
Now how long does that take?
About 2 days, two days and two nights. Approximately, you know, this is all approximate, obviously.
Now what's the situation when you get
Oh,
there?
It was unbelievable. It was awesome. The whole bloody town. See, Pyongyang was the capital of North Korea, so it was a big place. It wasn't a small village or anything like that. Lots and lots of brick buildings and town halls and whatever, you know, all that sort of thing. It was like a city, and it was on fire. It was on fire. Everywhere you looked, there was fire burning. The Americans were destroying the whole thing. Absolutely.
Deliberate.
Oh, deliberate, yeah, deliberate. They were destroying it. So, we didn't stay, we just kept coming.
What about the civilian population? Were they in evidence?
Oh, yeah, they were more in evidence once we left Pyongyang and started heading south.
But were they still living in Pyongyang, or had they left?
Well, if they were, they were living in hellish conditions, I would have thought. I don't think, well, obviously there'll always be some people who stay anyway. So there were people there, but we never saw very many civilians until we left Pyongyang and started going south towards Seoul.
And you're still just the four of you? Four
still
tanks.
Just four tanks. I don't remember seeing any other units until we got to Seoul.
Now, on the you went on the road again to Seoul?
Yeah, started heading south then.
Now, what about refugees that you saw?
Now, then we started to see lots and lots of refugees.
Now, what state were they in?
Oh, they were in a pretty bad state. They were all... See, you've got to remember that... Koreans carried everything on their back on what they called an A-frame, right? These A-frames, they were remarkable because they could carry enormous loads on these things. I don't know how they did it really, but it must have been the way that they'd done it for centuries, A-frames, and they're probably still doing it today to a certain extent. But they could carry enormous loads on these A-frames, so the men would have had the A-frames. And the women would have had a small handcart, which they pulled. I didn't see very many animals. You saw very few donkeys or horses. But you saw people. There were thousands of them. But they fortunately had the common sense to go to the side of the roads when the tanks were coming down. Because, I mean, we were as careful as we could be. But I understand the Americans, you know, didn't give a sod. They'd knock them down. That was it.
Well, were they, what state were they in? I mean, were they obviously distressed? I mean,
They were very distressed. And they were obviously very short of food and very short of water.
They're begging for food.
We gave them what... We did try and help them. We did give them what we had available that we could spare. So we did try and help them. But obviously, help was minimal.
Now, you weren't under air attack at all, were you?
No, we never saw an aeroplane.
Never saw that. The Americans did have air superiority.
Yeah, they had total air superiority all the time.
So you're going on. Are you seeing many troops en route?
Only Americans again, you see, all marching down the road. Because by this time, but we were passing an awful lot of broken down lorries, also, obviously, a lot of bodies. Because... at some point or the other, not so much in air sector on the west side, but more towards the centre, was where the Chinese had come down. They had attacked, and the Americans apparently weren't very good at defending themselves. I think they were very young, the Americans, and they weren't very disciplined, you know. When you read the stories today, you realise more what was going on than what you knew then. But obviously, we did see a lot of dead bodies. Now, this is only what I understand went on. But once we got to Seoul, which again, three or four days, maybe 5 days, I don't know. Once we got to Seoul, that was where the Americans had decided to hold the line. That's what we understood. Their job was to guard a section of the Imjin River and the Han River, which went through Seoul, and stop the refugees from crossing it.
So it's the Imjin. What's the other river, sorry?
The Han, H-A-N.
And they both pass through, is it through Seoul? Or
yeah, well, the Han River, I think, goes through Seoul and eventually reaches, comes into the Imjin. Now, the Han River was bridged, but in those days, as far as I know, there were only two bridges over the Han in those days. That was a railway bridge and the main road bridge. We were down by the railway bridge.
There was, the Han River.
Yeah, there was an infantry unit guarding the bridge to stop the refugees, who were in their bloody thousands by this time. We were on the south bank of the river, and our job was to stop the ferries from crossing.
Now, why were you stopping the refugees? If you just, I mean, you know, I think
I don't know for sure, but I would say that probably because they were going to interfere. I do know that a lot of the refugees that came through were in actual fact communist troops in disguise. That we were told that. They were infiltrating through with the refugees.
But did you know that at the time? Or?
No, we didn't know it at the time. No, we just told, all well, we were told to stop the refugees.
And so how did you do, I mean, did you have to open fire on the ferries?
No, no, no. What we did is, I don't know what other people did. I just know what we did. You would see the ferry coming in, loaded with people, obviously. Let it come in, let the people come off, get the crew off, and then that was it. That was, the ferry couldn't move.
So you just...
Yeah, we threw a few hand grenades in it just to disable it, but nothing else. But we made sure everybody was off first. And then that ferry was finished. It couldn't be used again. So then they couldn't use it.
So you were prepared to accept one lot, a small number of...
Well, you had to, or else you couldn't get the ferry. So
it wasn't a question of shooting, you know, with your main guns.
Oh, no, no, no. We would never have done that. They were civilians as far as we were concerned.
So all you would do is disable the ferry crew.
Yeah, that's it. That was what we considered our job.
And how did they stop them crossing the railway bridge?
Well, they had infantry up there. I'm not sure. It was a good few, maybe about half a mile away from us. So I'm not exactly sure what went on there, but there were infantry on there, and their job was to stop the refugees from coming over.
Now, anything else about that?
Well, eventually, after we'd done that for some time, we were pulled back to Seoul Airfield, because in those days, Seoul was where their main airfield was. And that was a military airfield. And our job was to guard the planes there. We were there, I don't know, a day, two, 3 days, whatever.
Did it involve anything? I mean, did you just plank yourselves in the corners of the airfield? Or what did you
well,
do?
No, we didn't actually. More or less. More or less, that's what we did. Again, I don't remember seeing any infantry there. We were more or less by ourselves.